Continuing on, how the greatest century of missions was derailed into the worst century of persecution. How did a terrorist act in Sarajevo sever the special relationship between Germany and Britain that had lasted for well over a century? It is understandable that Austria was going to deal with their troublesome neighbor, Serbia. Serbia had been encouraging and hosting revolutionaries and terrorists against the Austro-Hungarian Empire for a long time. However, as Austria presented the ultimatum to Serbia, the Russian Empire mobilized against Austria. And then this led to Germany mobilizing in support of its Austrian ally against Russia. And then the French, who were allied to the Russian Empire and were spoiling for a fight to reverse the humiliating military defeat that suffered at the hands of Germany in 1870, and I might add in 1815 too. So it's understandable about them fighting. We understand the French and the Russians want to fight Germany, and Germany wants to defend Austria, and Austria wants to fight Serbia. We see that. But strangely, King Edward VII of England had allied Russia and France to Britain, probably out of spite for his parents, Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. Few people realize that Queen Victoria was completely German and Prince Albert was 100% German. And they spoke German to one another in Buckingham Palace in London. That was their first language. The English royal family was totally German. And in fact, Germany and England, it would never have been possible to think of them fighting one another. But King Edward VII hated his parents. He was a lazy playboy. He was a whoremongering, prostitute-chasing drunkard. He loved the brothels of Paris. His father, Prince Albert, was an honorable, dedicated Lutheran Christian who had a work ethic, who was up early, who worked hard all day. His mother was dedicated Christian, evangelical. And King Edward III was none of that. Do you know that his name was not Edward? He was Albert. He was named after his father. He had his father's name. And he had such contempt for his father, he changed his name when he became king to Edward, to become King Edward VII instead of Albert I. So little did he respect his parents. And this Edward VII, in fact, he was described by the Kaiser as Satan. He said, this man is Satan. And Edward VII was a bitter, vindictive, nasty person. Queen Victoria blamed him for the early death of her husband, who she mourned for the rest of her life. She wore black for the rest of her life and lived in mourning because she was really in love with her husband. And when he died, an early death broken because of the reprobate behavior of his disgraceful son, his firstborn. So Britain ended up on the side of its traditional enemies, France and Russia, and against its traditional closest ally, Germany, for no good reason. Well, of course, it suited the banksters, because if Germany and Britain were together, nobody in the world could have beaten them. Britain had the greatest navy and Germany had the greatest army. And between them, they had the greatest industries. You could never have beaten Britain and Germany if they were allied. And so to get them to fight against one another was to the advantage of the banksters and those who wanted to bring communist revolutionaries to power in Russia. It's a terrible thing. Most of the 60 million soldiers involved in the Great War would have been unable to explain what they were actually fighting about. If you asked them, why are you fighting, they would have said, for king and country, for empire, for honor, to defend our country, for freedom. But that they were pawns in a diplomatic power game, manipulated by unseen conspirators behind the scenes, would have been the furthest thing from most of their minds. They were honorable people who went to war, who believed the people sending them to war were honorable people. But they were not. From the British point of view, involvement in the First World War does not make sense. No British interests were at stake. And had Britain stayed out of this European conflict, it would never have become a world war. It became a world war because Britain was a world power controlling a quarter of the world's population and land surface. So, question, what would have happened if Britain had stayed out of the conflict? Yes, Austria was going to fight Serbia and Russia was going to fight Austria and Germany was going to protect Austria and France wanted to fight Germany. But that would have lasted what? 2 months. It wouldn't have taken Germany long to have beaten France and Russia without Britain's navy opposed against them and sanctioning them. So what would have happened if Britain had stayed out of this European conflict? Boundaries would have adjusted a little bit, war would have been over quickly, and nothing much would have changed. The most important thing from Britain's perspective is Britain would have kept her empire, which was vast, stretching from Canada to Australia, New Zealand and India, phenomenal empire, controlling all the most important naval bases, all the gates of the cities and gates of the seas and the waterways, and governing all the most important trade routes. Britain ruled the waves. The British Empire in 1914 was the greatest power the world had ever seen, and it looked unbeatable and unassailable. Well, the second result, if Britain had stayed out of the war, would have been Germany would have been able to defeat Russia and France in a matter of months, as in fact they did. If it hadn't been for the British involvement, the war would have been over very quick and we'd never have fought a world war. Because the German army was the most efficient army the world had ever seen. Efficient, fast. New treaties would have been signed, some borders might have been adjusted, but no cataclysm or collapse of empires would have occurred. The Tsar would still be Tsar in Russia. France would still be France. Austro-Hungarian Empire would still be there. The death toll would have been a fraction of what it became. America would never have been dragged into the war, of course. Europe would have remained the most powerful industrial, political, and military force in the world, and spiritual force. The constitutional monarchies in Central and Eastern Europe would have continued to endure and reform. Some people said the First World War was essential that democracy could come to Europe. That's rubbish. Everywhere in Europe had democracies. Germany had a parliament, Austria had a parliament, Russia had a Duma, which was like the parliament. In fact, that the Russian Duma ordered the Tsar to abdicate in the third year of the war. So it showed the Tsar didn't have absolute power even in Russia. And he was the most absolute monarch of them all. But even he could be deposed by his own parliament. So if Britain had not entered the First World War, there would have been no power vacuum into which communism could have been born. There would have obviously been no Second World War either, which was only part two of the same match. All in all, if Britain had stayed out of the First World War, the world would be a better place, and a far better and different place. So why did Britain get involved in the First World War? There was no possible benefit for Britain to get involved in it. Well, the Liberals had been in power in the House of Commons since 1906. The electoral support was withering away, and Herbert Asquith's government was on the verge of collapse. It was clear that they went to war partly to keep the Conservative Party from ousting them in imminent elections. They were about to go into elections in that year, and they were about to lose it, and the only thing that could keep them in power was a war. So to those who ask, is it possible that any political leaders could be so small-minded as to jeopardize the lives of millions and jeopardize the good of their nation, merely to keep their own political party in power? Well, recent history confirms that just such corrupt, small-minded pettiness continues to predominate amongst many who are meant to be civil servants. We've seen it in how many countries that governments will do something completely opposite from what would be beneficial for them. Never before had so much of mankind been engaged simultaneously in war. Never before had mankind amassed such huge armies or produced such weapons which worked wholesale destruction on so gigantic a scale. Tanks, aircraft, submarines, gas warfare, flamethrowers. What was the effect on Germany? The Protestant faith had originated in Germany, in Wittenberg, the historic center of Lutheranism. From Germany, thousands of Protestant missionaries had gone out into many parts of the world. And we learn from Patrick Johnson of Operation World just how important Germany was spiritually. Look here, 1900. The top countries in the world for Christians. America was the largest country of Christians. Russia was the second largest. Germany was the third largest in terms of numbers of Christians. 1950, America was first and Germany was second because Russia had been knocked out by the communists. Now you look at top evangelicals In 1900, the top evangelical country in the world population-wise was America, second greatest America, Britain, third largest Germany. 1960, America, Britain, South Africa's third. Germany had been knocked out as the third largest evangelical country in the world. You can see how from the world wars, tremendous growth of Christianity before the First World War, and phenomenal break off. We lost the projection. We should have carried on going like that. If present trends had continued, we would have been over 60% of the population of the world if present trends had continued by now. But the world wars brought Christians down, and Islam and communism gained at our expense. The top missionary sending countries in 1900, Britain, America, and Germany. And they ended up on opposite sides, Protestants fighting one another. By 1960, Germany is down to the eighth largest missionary sending country in the world. So the effect on Germany was terrible. Germany still sends out missionaries, but nowhere near as much as they used to. It was Germany that bore the brunt of World War I. They fought on two and then three fronts. Russian front, Western front, and even the Southern front with Italy. It was Germany who was crushed and divided by the outcome of the World Wars. Lots of the territory being stolen, cut off, given to Russia, Poland, and others. It was chiefly the Protestant sections of Germany which were betrayed into the Soviet zone and subjected to communist oppression for 45 years after the Second World War. Millions of Germans were forcibly displaced by the Western movement of Poland's boundary. 14 million Germans lost their homes, were just kicked out, moved away, lost their ancestral homes which the people had lived in for centuries. Most of these displaced people were Protestants. The Versailles Treaty that ended the First World War was vindictive and treacherous, and the British Propaganda Office, after the war was over, extracted extortion from Germany, which destroyed the economy, stole all of their gold. These three evil men, Woodrow Wilson, Clemenceau, and Lloyd George, the British Prime Minister, the French President, and the American President, these three men, all powerful, all ignorant men, carving continents with only a child to lead them, as Arthur Balfour put it. The Versailles Peace Treaty of 1919 sought to pin the war guilt exclusively on Germany, when obviously every participant had their own guilt and responsibility for this foolish war. But it was convenient to blame one party. And as was pointed out, actually Germany had done more than any other country to try and avoid the war. The Kaiser was the only one who actually tried to avoid the war, and he got all the blame for the war when everyone else had been enthusiastic for it, and he's the only one who's actually trying to put the brakes on and get them to reason. He is trying continually to bring peace once the war had started. And the Versailles Treaty brought out the economic and political collapse of Germany. They had to be printing millions of marks worth absolutely nothing, because all the gold had been taken away and the industries had been stolen, and the French looted and sacked the Saar region, and as a result, the money was only good for wallpaper. When you produce this kind of inflation, it steals from everyone. Millions of Germans lost their homes. 2 million German men were killed in the First World War, and the Jewish bankers stole their homes, dispossessed their widows and orphans, took over their farms, their homes. And so there was a tremendous bitterness and poverty and suffering as a result of the First World War, and the bitterness of the bankers who had caused the war and profited from the war and who had stolen the livelihoods of millions of widows and orphans in Germany. You can imagine. This is how the Central Powers of Germany and Austria were before the war. Germany lost all their colonies, all their private property, even private owned property, farms in Southwest Africa and East Germany, stolen. No compensation, taken away. People lost their fortunes. Families lost their homes, their farms, their estates. Their savings were destroyed, worthless. All the gold was taken away, all the industries taken away. And you can imagine why Germany was keen to put things right with the Second World War. Well, they didn't want it to be a world war, but they wanted to get things right and reverse the Versailles Treaty. Because these were all the lands that they'd lost, been given to other neighbors. Alsace, Lorraine, Rhineland, the Saar, Posen, West Prussia. Huge amounts of territory stolen and taken away. Even territory given to Denmark. Austria lost even more. Most of Austria was carved up and given away. One of the greatest powers in Europe for centuries now became a very, very small country. And all these new countries developed. You could get war heroes with their medals for bravery begging on the streets because they couldn't do work because they'd lost their leg in the war. And there's no pensions. There's no welfare. There was no medical aid available. And Germany was surrounded by huge armies and they were not allowed to have more than 100,000. So there was a lot of resentment. Marshal Ferdinand Foch said, this is not peace, this is an armistice for 20 years. Exactly true. 20 years later, another war erupted. The involvement of predominantly Protestant Britain in the two world wars had a disastrous consequence for Christianity in their realm. Throughout the 19th century, Britain had been the greatest source of missionaries worldwide and the greatest finance of missions worldwide. In both Britain and Germany, the number of Protestant churches plummeted. This is how Europe looks today. Percentage of Protestants, nowhere, aside from Moldova, is it above 10%. Shocking secularization of Europe. Missionary involvement declined dramatically. And both countries suffered shocking secularization. So, who benefited from the First World War? Many bankers and industrialists, like Rockefeller and Rothschild, amassed stupendous wealth at the expense of the combatants who incurred staggering, crippling debts. Those who control the debt control everything. All wars are banker wars. As Mrs. Rothschild said, if my sons did not want war, there would not be any. These Jewish bankers are the people who have caused the First and Second World Wars and most of the others too. And Rockefeller. Rothschild and Rockefeller. The two big beneficiaries of the First World War. And, of course, Vladimir Lenin. Communism benefited the most from the wars. They seized and subjugated all of Russia and, in time, most of Eastern Europe. In the name of revolution. Copying the French Revolution. Bitterness, hatred, vindictiveness, hatred for Christianity and God in particular. They massacred vast numbers of Christians. And so throughout the Soviet Union, you saw Christians being killed by the millions. Something in the region of 66 million Christians were killed by the communists in the Soviet Union. Even the beautiful daughters of the Tsar, butchered by these Bolshevik revolutionaries. Massacres, destruction. This Belakun, who took over Hungary in just 2 years, murdered hundreds of thousands before he was ousted. Stalin and Lenin, between them, killed 66 million people. Here you can see the idol worship of Stalin. There's Stalin, there's Mao Zedong. And there's Khrushchev. Dekulakization. It wasn't Robert Mugabe who started this business of farm invasions. It was started by Lenin in the Ukraine. It led to 66 million people being starved to death. In fact, if the people had been allowed to flee, they would have fled to other countries. Zimbabwe, more than half of the population of Zimbabwe has fled the farm invasion, so they haven't all starved because they could get food from relief aid and from missions like ours and from foreign aid and from Zambia and coming into South Africa. But of course, if it had been like Russia, where they had a closed border totally, then you would have had half the population of Zimbabwe die of starvation by now too, as the consequence of farm invasions. But in Russia, there was no transport to get them to other countries. They died by the millions. The lands that used to produce the breadbasket of Europe, starvation, deliberately incurred. As Lenin said, I don't care if half the population of Russia die, as long as the remaining half are communist. Germany had communist revolutions. The Marxists were rioting in Germany, in Berlin, in Bavaria, fighting in the streets, artillery fire in the streets, all while the Versailles Treaty was carrying on. The army had been demobilized, the people were defenseless, and in that situation, chaos. As Joseph Stalin said, it is not who votes that counts, it's who counts the votes. What a cynical mentality, but so true. The rise and fall of communism. 1917, communists took over more and more countries. After the Second World War, you can see another huge increase of communist countries. And then, in the time of Jimmy Carter, another 13 countries have betrayed communism. And then finally, with the defeat of the Soviets in Afghanistan and Angola, the fall of the Berlin Wall, many countries got their freedom. But during this time, over 100 million people killed under communist regimes. Look at the spread of atheism. 1900. Only one country in the world had quite a lot of non-religious atheist people. But look in 1950. One-third of the world's population. And look where it is today. And this is where it will go in 2050 if present trends continue. We don't get serious revival. Now, we must get some attention here. This is where we are headed if we are not careful. Here you can see in the yellow the growth of Protestants as a percentage of the world's population. The blue is showing you Catholicism. The purple, the Orthodox. You can see also the growth of the Anglicans is the light blue. Yes. I would be independents. Independent churches are the red, the light blue is the Anglicans, the yellow is the Protestant, the dark blue is the Catholics, the Orthodox are the purple. And the M is so small, it's the marginals like the cults, but that's so thin you can barely see it. In terms of percentage of the world's population, sorry, this is Europe, this is not the whole world, this is just Europe. This is the percentage of Europe. So you can see the numbers are all going down in Europe, that is correct, but not in the world. Europe in 1900, you can see Scandinavia, British Isles, Germany, very evangelical. Today, mostly secular. Oppenheimer and Rockefeller, this is Rockefeller in America, his clan, they control the United Nations and the World Monetary Fund and the International Bank. The Council of Foreign Relations here. Council of Foreign Relations and the Illuminati are behind a lot of what goes on in politics today. And in Europe, it's the Bilderbergers. They all work together, actually. The Bilderbergers are all the top bankers in Europe. These are key people connected with the Bilderbergers, either political or economic giants. And basically it works like this. There's a Council of Foreign Relations that determines American foreign policy and who's president of America. For example, Obama is a member of the CFR. So was George Bush Sr., not Junior. So was Bill Clinton. So is Hillary Clinton. They're part of the CFR. Trilateral Commission seeks to unite both the Club of Rome and Europe and the United Nations with the American goal. You've got in Britain the Royal Institute of International Affairs. In Europe, you've got the Bilderbergers. All of these work together. The Club of Rome is the power behind the European Union. And so the UN, Council of Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, all of these groups work together where the Bilderbergers meet. And the key people in each of the Bilderberger group, these are the ones who are controlling the European Union. And here you can see the summit and world financial events at the UN. Notice, you've got Muslims and Marxists and socialists and KJB fronts and others and Goldman Sachs bankers working together. These are the people who determine most of the economy of the world. Sorry?
KJB fronts, United
Nations. That's correct. The man who started the United Nations was a communist KGB agent. The first Secretary General was Alger Hiss, proved to be a KGB agent. The head of the World Monetary Fund, KGB agent. The KGB set up the United Nations from the beginning. It's a KGB front organization. That's correct. Not all, no. I mean, some are socialists, some are bankers, some are Marxists, different sorts. Some are Muslims even, you can see. But these are the ones who are determining the world's economy. This is a few years ago. We could have one with Obama standing in there now too. And so, what they've got is how they are all linked together in different ways of profiting companies. 40% of Africa's wealth is held offshore by its own leaders. Africa's leaders keep 40% of the wealth of Africa offshore. They don't even invest in their own countries. And so you can see here the cost to American taxpayers of their different wars. Trillions and trillions and trillions. And how it works. We could go more, but you can see the goal of the world government is the European Union, the American Union, the Pacific Union, and the African Union are all to work together under world government. And so the AU is one of the tools of the New World Order. Council on Foreign Relations, Hillary Clinton is trying to become the next president of America. She has done no good for our continent or for her own country. All of these people, including some of the Republicans and Democrats, belong to the same Council on Foreign Relations. One reason why things don't always get better in America, because basically they say, do you want Socialist Party A or Socialist Party B? But the two hands on the same body. And these are some of the creeps who are wrecking our continent right now. Some people say religions caused most of the wars in the world. Well, actually, atheism's caused most of the wars in the world. Non-religious wars are even more than Islamic and Christian wars, or Catholic wars. The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate the unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of any country. The Bible warns us about Satan deceiving the nations, and we can see it. And right now we have got a lot of communist influence in many of our societies. You take how Germany was divided right at this point for 45 years by the Berlin Wall. Country of the Reformation, of Dr. Martin Luther, but put under communism. In the wake of the First World War, many came to speak of a post-Christian era, after Christianity, Christianity in the past. As wars and revolutions threw the entire world into disorder, pessimists and critics predicted the imminent disappearance of Christianity. After the First World War, people were talking about the end of Christianity. And after the Second World War, they were really convinced this is the end of Christianity. But, against all odds, despite having been dealt a death blow in its heartland, Protestant Christians showed remarkable vitality. As Christians overcame the Roman Empire, as Christians overcame the barbarian and the Viking invasions, as Christians overcame the Arab invasions and the onslaught of the Mongol Empire and the bubonic plague and the invasions of the Turks and the upheavals of the French Revolution, Christians have adapted and overcome, even in Europe. Christianity experienced dramatic growth in Africa, America, and Asia. And even in Europe, in some of the most surprising, unexpected places, even behind the Iron Curtain, and I'll show you more on that tomorrow, churches have multiplied and faith has deepened, despite the most relentless anti-Christian pressure by communist governments. You take Russia. In 1917, there were 50,000 churches in Russia. By 1941, there were not even 200 churches in all of Russia. And not a single Bible college, not a single theological college or monastery in all of Russia. From 1917 to 1941, literally, they had got to the point where there were not even 200 churches left. 49,000 churches destroyed. Millions killed. And today, 30,000 Orthodox churches in Russia alone. And many thousands of others. So dramatic things have happened. You can obtain this. We've got the notes in your manual on the catastrophic causes and the catastrophe of World War I. You can also find it in a PowerPoint format on our reformationsa.org website. If you use Facebook, you'll see I post a lot of historical things also on Reformation 500 as a Facebook page. Jesus taught, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." It is essential that we learn the lessons of history so that we may recognize the lies of propaganda. We need to study the Word of God so that we can be freed from deception. And a church history manual, I trust, will help you with some tools and insights on that. So, do you have any questions or comments at all? Yes.
See, the way Europe was before, you said like if you ask them today what causes them to fight against each other, they might not give a concrete answer. Evidence.
They're very confused about it.
So what actually led to African as well, to the European Union, and how is it helping them in the time of growing in faith? Because I have some tension in EU, they don't even mention the name of God, and they even start in prayer.
No.
What benefit does it have to be the body of Christ over there? And also, what made them to hate Russia so much? Let me put the people, the Americans, they give them such. Is it because it's highly many Christians and it's all this abortion that's going on, gazing? Is it because that's why they.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Good question. Now, I've spent a lot of my life fighting the Russians because they were communists at one time. But now the Russians are our friends and our brothers and sisters in Christ, and we should not be against them. And the media today is against Russia, not because it's communist. They were for Russia when it was communist. They're against Russia because Russia is becoming Christian. And because the Russian President Putin, they're against him, not because he used to be in the KGB, but because he's now for Christianity and he's for marriage being between one man and one woman for life. And because he's passing laws against homosexual propaganda. And they're printing Bibles. And they're putting chaplains in the army. And because Russia's friendly to the gospel. And the Russian government last year hosted a big family conference. 1,000 delegates from 100 countries to discuss pro-life, pro-family, moral concerns. How to protect the family and marriage and build large families again for the good of civilization and Christianity. So the Russian government is doing a lot of interesting, positive things right now. There are 200 Orthodox churches being built in Moscow alone now. Just one city. The growth of Christianity in Russia now is huge. This is why. The anti-Christians who run the media and Hollywood hate Putin and hate Russia. And they're trying to make it out that he's trying to start a new war. My information is, and I've got many Russian and Ukrainian friends, is that the American government's trying to start a war. They started a war. They've started problems in Ukraine. Ukraine had a freely elected president and government who were allied to Russia, but then the European Union and the United Nations, especially American government, CIA, worked for mobs on the street to dissatisfaction, where they overthrew the elected government. And then an unelected person popped in during the chaos who wants to sign Ukraine to be part of Europe, the European Union, the Euro currency, and NATO. It's a military alliance against Russia. So Russia at this point says, well, if that's the way you want it, we're going to pull our factories back, thank you. Many of the factories were closed down, they pulled back to Russia. And we're going to stop our aid of these things, and our oil pipelines and gas pipelines through you, we'll have to rethink about this. You're going to pay more now for your oil and gas, what you've been getting so cheap before. And these territories, which actually have majority Russians, should be free to break away and rejoin Russia. Which makes sense. If you're going to join our enemies, then we're going to take it back. And so they took back Crimea, and there's civil war in different places. But all this was started because of America meddling in Ukraine. If they left Ukraine alone, there wouldn't be a war there. So this is something the West has started, this war. And now they're trying to blame Putin, but this is his backyard. This is his territory. It's his industries. It's his oil pipelines, lifeline. So in many ways, what's going on in Ukraine and Russia is not Russia trying to start a war. It's the Americans and the European Union trying to start a war with Russia. And Russia's responded very restrainedly. The reason why you hear a lot of bad things about Putin is not because he used to be in the KGB. It's because he's so pro-Christian, his policies now. So right now, what was the main message of Obama when he came to Africa in 2013? Homosexual rights, gay marriage. the president and vice president of Kenya gave a good answer. They said, people who have destroyed their own country should not presume to come and lecture us on the way forward. Yes?
Yes, we've talked about that issue today, but I'd like to just tell you about Hitler. What do you say about Hitler, his
belief? Well, of course, but we're the victor's version. The people who wrote the history books after the war were the victors, and they just took wartime propaganda and elaborated and extrapolated and exaggerated. And so it's hard to get any coherent, logical, balanced, truthful presentation on Adolf Hitler because he lost. And the people who hated him wrote the history. And so you can't expect a very rational and factual presentation on him. From the way they talk, Hitler was the most evil man in the history of the world. And yet, we know that actually Joseph Stalin was the most evil man of the 20th century, but he was our ally in the war. So we pretend that Hitler was the worst, even though we know Stalin was the worst. And we ignore a lot of things about Hitler. And the fact is that he was fighting communism. And so you can understand why the people who love communism hate him so much, because he was within inches of defeating the Soviet Union and freeing the world of the communist menace, and the world would have been a better place for it. If we had stayed out of the war, Germany would have won, Russia would have lost, communism would have been finished, we would all be better for it, Africa would still be free, and tens of millions of our relatives and fellow countrymen would be alive today. So basically, the conclusion, I and my father fought in the Second World War on the British side for 6 years in the Royal Artillery. My father came to the conclusion in the war that we fought on the wrong side. And that's what I've heard many people who fought on the British and American side, that we fought for the wrong side. We supported the Soviet Union. We said we were fighting for freedom and democracy, but actually all we did was extended communism. Betrayed 100 million Christians in the hands of communism. So I know what I'm saying is shocking, because I'm saying the opposite of what Hollywood says. But remember, who runs Hollywood? Atheists who hate Christ and who use the name of Jesus as a swear word. Blasphemers. And so don't believe what the blaspheming anti-Christian pagans who slander Christians and who curse Christ in every film they produce. Why accept their version of history either? Now, I've traveled all over Europe. I've spoken to many of the survivors. I know a lot of friends in Eastern Europe. I know people who've suffered in the concentration camps. I have a relative who suffered 10 years in one of Stalin's concentration camps in Russia. And my conviction about the Second World War is what A.J.P. Taylor said. A.J.P. Taylor, the main British historian in the First and Second World War, says, Hitler was no more evil than Churchill or Roosevelt. In some cases, Roosevelt and Churchill were worse. Because, for example, they did open bombing of cities, incinerating of whole cities, killed 2 million German civilians, including hundreds of thousands in Dresden alone, with firebombing of cities. And you think of the war crimes committed by the Allies, like nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they want to talk about freedom and democracy. So, Adolf Hitler was obviously a dictator. Adolf Hitler was a ruthless man, but he did not want war with Britain. There's no doubt about that. And he certainly didn't want a world war, and he didn't prepare his country for world war. Do you know that Germany never went to a total war economy till 1943? What do I mean? Germany never put their women in factories. The mothers would work at home. They never put mothers in the factories. The women were not working in the factories. That was, and continually, Albert Speer, the man in charge of munitions, kept pleading with Hitler, let us put the women in factories. The British put all the women in factories, millions of them already, in 1939. Here we are, 1943, and the German women still weren't being, to the very end. Hitler never allowed the women to be put in factories. Until 1943, the Germans worked an 8-hour day in the factories. They stopped for Sunday. The British worked 24 hours a day, three shifts, through Saturday and Sunday from 1939 on. The British were on a total war economy. The British made more bombers than Germany even before the war started. Most people don't know that. Poland had a bigger army than Germany did when the war started. France had a bigger army than Germany had. France had more tanks than Germany had. Britain had vastly more bombers than the whole of the German Luftwaffe before the war began. Most people don't know that. Germany didn't want a world war. They were ready for a war with France, they were ready for a war with Poland, even ready for a war with Russia. But they didn't ever expect a war with Britain because they never wanted a war with Britain. Germany was allowed to build up to a third of the Royal Navy size. They never built their navy even up to 10% of the Royal Navy size. Britain had more submarines than Germany had. These things you probably don't know. I mean, these are not well-known facts, but these are facts. The fact is Germany never built a four-engine bomber. Germany only had two-engine bombers that could carry 1 ton, close quarter support. Germany never built an aircraft carrier. How can you plan world domination without an aircraft carrier? Germany didn't have one aircraft carrier, ever. They never even designed a plane that could fly off an aircraft carrier. Britain, France, America, Japan had lots of aircraft carriers. Italy had aircraft carrier. But there was no aircraft carriers in German Navy. Why? If Germany wanted to fight Britain, or wanted a world war, or wanted to conquer America, or wanted to dominate the world, how could they do that without aircraft carriers and a navy bigger than the British or Royal Navy? So there's a lot of lies told about Adolf Hitler. He made 16 peace offers between 1939 and 1940 with Britain to try and make war with peace with Britain. He never wanted war with Britain. He wanted war with Russia, with the Soviet Union, with communism. Of course, that was his enemy. But war with Britain, never. In fact, his deputy, Rudolf Hess, his number two, flew to Britain unarmed as a peace emissary in 1941, before Operation Barbarossa, when Germany went to war with Russia. He flew to Scotland, the deputy Führer, number two in the German Reich, and he went to try and offer peace that they would withdraw from everywhere in the West if they were just given a free hand in the East to deal with Russia, the Soviet Union. And the British locked up Rudolf Hess, wouldn't allow him to be interviewed by any historian for the rest of his life. Nobody could prove he'd ever committed a crime. He was an honorable man. He had come in peace. The least they could do is make him a prisoner of war. But no, they locked him up after the war. He was murdered in the 1980s when Glasnost came about and Gorbachev was willing to release him from his side because he's in Spandau prison. And the British had him strangled to death. He is never allowed to be interviewed. The last surviving leader of the German Reich, Rudolf Hess. Why? As an old man in his 80s, they just strangled him and said he'd hung himself when he is so arthritic he couldn't even lift his arms up, let alone pull himself up to hang himself. How could he do this? This arthritic man needed help walking. They strangled him and said he committed suicide and hung himself because Gorbachev wanted to release him. But he had information. And we now know that information. The Rudolf Hess files he was interviewed are sealed till 2030. Why would you seal anything for so long? Because it's explosive. If the British people knew that they weren't fighting for their freedom, they weren't fighting for the salvation of the empire, they were fighting to save the Soviet Union and communism. Because Britain was never at stake or at risk because Germany never wanted to attack Britain. Germany never declared war on Britain, not in the First World War, not in the Second, not in history. Germany has always been a friend of Britain. Britain declared war on Germany. Now, this isn't what we get from the media, but remember who runs the media? The Jews, most of whom are communists, are running Hollywood and the newspapers. So, of course, they have this hatred for Germany. They've made thousands of anti-German films. And the hostility, why do they hate Germany? Germany's Protestant. Germany's the birthplace of Martin Luther and the Reformation. So there's an irrational hatred for Germany, and they twist things to the point that to blame one man, Adolf Hitler, for all the evils done in the Second World War is very convenient, because he's dead. He can't defend himself. And it's convenient to try and cover up the atrocities of our people, I mean the British and the Americans, in being allied to communist Soviet Union and in bombing cities in Europe to justify that, to make up everything it possibly could to make it out that you had this madman in Germany who wanted war with the whole world. And yet, if Germany wanted war with the whole world, why did they not build aircraft carriers? Why did they not have four-engine bombers? Why did they not mobilize their people into 24-hour work days from the beginning? Why did they never go on a war economy? Why did they never put their women in factories? There's so many they could have got 11 million more workers. But no, Germany had a different outlook, and they always were trying to have peace. But the Allies didn't want peace. They wanted to crush and destroy Germany. There was no desire for peace. Even General Eisenhower said, if we had been willing to have a negotiated peace, the war would have ended 3 years earlier. Germany was offering peace at every point. They didn't want to fight to the end. They were forced to, because the other side didn't want peace. And who benefited from the Second World War? Soviet Union and the bankers. So, what I think of Adolf Hitler? Secular humanist, ruthless politician, but by no means the cause of the First World War or the Second World War. By no means the most evil leader in the Second World War. I'd agree with A.J.P. Taylor. I believe Roosevelt and Churchill were far more evil than Hitler, and Stalin was more evil than them all. So, if I lived in Germany at that time, I'm sure I would have got into trouble with Hitler, because I'd be opposing him on everything from abortion onwards, because, of course, I'm against socialism, national socialism, as well as international socialism. But, having said that, he wasn't as evil as Stalin. I would have fought both. I would have been against both. But if I was in Britain in the Second World War, knowing what I know now, I would agree with my father. It's a war we should have stayed out of. We didn't benefit from it. And the only people who benefited were our real enemies, the Soviet Union and communism. So I don't like Hitler, but I don't believe most of the things they say about him. Yes? Yes. What book do I recommend? Well, you will see, if I may just have a look at this, I've made some recommendations of books at some of the places, like we deal here with, when it comes to the consequences of catastrophe of the First World War. At the end of that page, 94, I've put A History of Christianity by Kenneth Scott Latourette, which could be in your library. And then also, Europe 1815-1914. I really like The Best of Enemies, Britain and Germany, Truth and Lies and Two World Wars by Richard Milton. Very good book. The First World War by A.G.P. Taylor is very good. But the best one I've come across, we've now got at our Christian Liberty Books, Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War. How Britain lost the empire and the West lost the world. I think that is the most brilliant, insightful analysis of the First and Second World War, and that's written by Patrick Buchanan, who was Ronald Reagan's chief advisor. Any other questions or comments? You'll see a lot on this on our website. If you go onto the ReformationSA.org website, I've got sermon audios on this. I've got lectures on it, an audio. We've got PowerPoints on this, a lot of them, and a lot of articles too. So you go under there, history articles, and you can see quite a lot. You go under PowerPoints, you get a lot, sermon audio link, many more. So I've been putting a lot of things on, especially this last year, because we've just marked 100 years since the First World War erupted. At this stage, we are remembering 100 years of the First World War. And do you know, I went to Ypres in Belgium, one battlefield, big battlefield. There are 156 British and Commonwealth war cemeteries there. I went to six cemeteries, six British cemeteries, the biggest ones. I counted 84 Hammonds, my ancestors, on the walls. I didn't go to all the cemeteries, not just one battlefield. We lost a lot of our family in the First World War. A lot. Masses and masses of our people were wiped out. For what purpose?